The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 21st of May, 2019. On the podcast today, Michael Masterman, chairman of W Resources, WRES, his ticker there, and Michael explains the significance of the first ore being fed into the newly commissioned jig and mill plant at their flagship project La Perilla in Spain. Also on the podcast, Lawrence Reed, CEO of Bezant Resources, BZT, talks about their updated environmental impact assessment approvals for the Eureka project in Argentina. I also have a big argument with Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, who reckons Thomas Cook is an opportunity. Maybe it is for trade, but I'm an investor, so I argued with him. TCG. Also talk about Brave Bison and Itaconics. And by the way, if you use the Vox Markets app, which is free, and you derive some value from it, please pay us back in kind online. Go to the app store you got it from, Android or Apple, and give us a 5-star rating and review if you like it that much, of course. And that would be much appreciated. I also have on the podcast today, of course, as always, two lists. Top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top 5 most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see a wealth of other content. You can see an article on Minds and Machines. You see Zach covering some stocks today. He's covering Emotion, Thomas Cook, Tolu, Nuformix, Sirius, and VRE. That's at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Michael Masterman, chairman of W Resources. That's WRES, ticker there. Michael, thank you for joining me.
Justin, great to be on Vox.
Yeah, well, yeah, you got an RNS out today, a bit of news, significant news, a milestone ticked off here. First ore fed to commissioned jig and mill plant at La Perilla. And like always, you know, before we get into that and what that means, give us that in context. Take it back. What is W Resources all about? Because this is your flagship sort of operation, but there's other things going on. So just give us a brief summary, if you could, Michael.
Okay, so W Resources is listed on AIM, ticker WRES. We're focused on tungsten, tin and gold, principally in Spain and Portugal. Our flagship mine is the La Perilla mine in southwestern Spain. But in addition to La Perilla, we have a very high-grade tungsten mine development, Régua, in northern Portugal, and a very nice gold deposit in central Portugal.
Marvellous. So if someone's reading this now, and to them that doesn't make any sense or doesn't seem like it's English, can you explain what you're talking about when you say first ore fed to commission jig and mill plant at La Perilla? What does that mean? What's the significance of that?
Okay, well, maybe putting it in context, there's four parts to allowing us to produce at large scale tungsten and tin at the La Perilla mine. Mm-hmm. The first is the mining operation. So the mine is operational. It's blasting and digging up that ore and delivering it to the crusher, which is the second part of the process. We have a fully commissioned, fully operational crusher that takes 350 tons per hour, and that can be operated with one person. So that's the second part of the plant. The part we're focusing on and the subject of the release today is the jig and the associated mill. What the jig does is it takes the crushed ore and upgrades it by a factor of approximately 2, so that it's higher grade before that jigged ore is fed into the final part of the process, which is the concentrator, and the concentrator makes the final tungsten and tin concentrate that we sell to customers. So we've got the mine operational, we've got the crusher operational. This is an important milestone because it's saying we're feeding ore into the jig, and we're successfully taking it through the process to produce upgraded material.
Yeah.
Now, we're lucky because we have an existing concentrator, so we'll be able to take that upgraded jig material and process it through our old concentrator to produce tungsten concentrate, which we'll be selling to our customers in Europe and the United States. But when the large-scale concentrator, which is currently under construction, is finished in June, we'll then be able to move on to processing through the full circuit.
Yeah. But I see in your RNS, you just sort of describe how complex a situation or scenario this is, or process. And like you know, it can't just be started and off you go. 200 tons per month by the end of 2019. You're hoping to get, but I mean, right now, and I quote: there are two jigs, two roll mills, a thickener, a reject disposal system, 10 screens and feeders, 9 conveyors, 5 pumps, over 50 motors, which need to be started, aligned, and tied to an integrated control system. So it's quite a complex thing. How long will it take before you get up to speed, then, Michael?
Okay, so we finished construction in April, and what we've been doing over the last, well, effectively 4 weeks is getting all of those motors, all of those pumps, all of those conveyors, and the primary equipment, the jigs and the mills, organized and running in sequence so that we can run on as a fully integrated operation. So we're off and away, being able to feed ore to the jig and upgrade it so it's ready for feed to the concentrator. And we're feeding it to our existing concentrator, so we'll be able to make final product. But I just wanted to, I guess in that quote, I just wanted to make sure investors understand it's not like driving a car out of the showroom. You know, turn on the key and everything, you can go up to 100 kilometres in 60 seconds. You have to make sure these relatively complicated but conventional metallurgical technology is well set up. And if you set it up well and commission it well, it pays huge dividends in the future in terms of productivity and availability.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. I mean, you know, let's put it into context there. How much are you hoping to get up to? What are you hoping to produce? And financially, how much is that going to give you in cash?
Okay, so where we're heading to on the 4 stages of the plant, the mine, the crusher, the jig, and the concentrator, is the capacity to produce 200 tons a month of tungsten concentrate and tin about 20 tons a month of tin concentrate. We will, once we've got the large concentrator completed in June and commissioned through July, we'll be able to ramp up to that design capacity, and we're setting ourselves a target of getting to that design of 200 tons a month by December this year. Now, along the way, we'll generate revenues. We'll be generating revenues now, and we'll be expanding those revenues. And in a full year of annual design capacity, we're generating about $36 million of revenue and approximately $20 million US dollars of EBITDA.
Nice. And put that into context, your valuation at the moment is $26 million, is that at the moment?
Yeah, probably 26 million pounds, which is probably, in round numbers, is probably 30 million US. So we're 20 million of forward earnings before interest and tax on a market cap of 30.
Yeah.
So significant scope for us to deliver those cash flows and deliver strong returns to shareholders.
Yeah, and those cash flows, what is it intended to use for? Are you going to help with other operations as well then? Will that, facilitate that?
Look, it did. I mean, the priority is to get those cash flows coming through. We'll reduce our debt a bit. We'll make sure that some of our Portuguese operations go sensibly into production as well. But we'll also keep an eye on getting some cash to shareholders when we've got strong growing cash flows after a good year of production.
Yeah. Marvelous stuff. Okay, well, Michael, good stuff there. By the way, what's the next sort of milestone you're hoping to achieve here at La Perla?
Probably the next big one will be construction completion of the big concentrator. Mm-hmm. There's some nice time-lapse photography of the speed in which that is moving along on our website and also on Twitter and I hope Fox. And that's a good way for shareholders to get an update on the progress we're making on that front.
Yeah. As always, give us those three reasons. If someone's listening, not following the story, but likes the sound of what you're doing here, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
So La Perla, our flagship tungsten tin mine, is near completion and it will move to large-scale production in the second half of 2019. That's going to generate significant revenues and cash flows. Second reason is we have the ability to quite significantly expand our overall production from our tungsten assets, both in the expansion of La Perla and also in our new Régua tungsten mine in northern Portugal. And thirdly, we've got some very nice gold assets which will add further growth to the group.
Yeah, and it's probably worth mentioning, you do hold a skin in the game. I think that's very important. You know, as an investor, I always look for that. And you're a significant shareholder as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I've got about approximately 8% of the company. And
how much? You dipped out, then you said. You did, when you said the percentage.
18%.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a good chunk of shares yourself, so you're aligned with the shareholders. Marvellous stuff. Michael, thank you very much for that, and we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Lawrence Reed, Chief Executive Officer of Byzant Resources, BZT ticker. You all right, Lawrence?
Yeah, very well, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks. Yes. Now, you've released some news. Is updated environmental impact assessment approvals granted for your Eureka project exploration areas in Argentina. And we'll dig into that in a bit. As always, though, Lawrence, I know this is not your only project going on there with Byzant. So just give us a brief overview of what you're all about at Byzant Resources, please.
It's an actual established copper gold portfolio. The share price is extremely low at the moment, but we have an awful lot of copper and I think pretty uniformly industry experts and industry itself across the market says copper is going to be the metal that's needed over the next 5 years due to supply shortfalls. So in the middle of the Brexit turmoil and the US-China trade war, I think, has suppressed the stock. And also because we've been doing lots of quiet work, I'd say now is a good opportunity to buy, probably over the next year.
Marvellous. So, yeah, look at the market cap. You're on about sub £800,000 valuation. So a tiny micro cap, you know, in essence. So take us through this. What does it mean to have, you know, updated environmental impact assessment approvals? What does that mean?
It basically means that we can go out and explore and drill. So what we've done is over the last 18 months is we've turned the company around to concentrate purely on copper gold. So we've got three assets. We've got Mankind in the Philippines, which is a big project with lots of data, but expensive to drill on. And we've brought Zambia in, which has quite a lot of data and is quite cheap to drill on, and we have Eureka, which has practically no data but and may well be cheap to drill on, but what we've been doing is over the last year and a half we've been looking very carefully at what we do have and what we do know about Eureka, which is it was an old copper mine, copper gold mine at surface. And we've been looking at some of the rock chips and the Codelco reports on the copper gold, all within about 300 metres from surface. We've been building enough an idea of the most prospective areas. And what we've done is we then submitted a series of approvals on what we think is the best ground. Mm-hmm. So we thought, well, we don't need to spend time, money and effort on permitting the entire thing. We'll get the EIA for the entire thing. Let's just pick the bits that we think have the best chance of exploration success. Because what we're doing is we're building up a JV strategy. We're talking to groups saying we're not South American specialists. Frankly, with a share price with a market cap of 800,000, we have to be very careful with our money. We want to do some deal where we have people who can deploy drill rigs quickly and drill into what we think are really interesting areas on Eureka and find copper gold. And what this allows us to do is mobilise drill rigs. There will be some standard permissions, which we've outlined in the RNS, but effectively this is a greenlit project to start proper work on.
Okay, you know, you've got a couple of projects, like you say. Where does this one fit in now? Because, I mean, which is the most advanced? Are you deciding to take one ahead forward? Are you focusing on one of these projects, or what's the score?
Yeah, what we're doing is we're looking at strategies across the projects. So we're looking at partners, big partners, or potential acquirers or developers for Mankind, because it's such a huge project. So we're actively doing that at the moment. And that's got a huge amount of data. And if we had the right share price, it would be great to carry on drilling, because really we know exactly what Mankind is, and so does everybody else. This is an issue around political risk in the Philippines, which is increasingly becoming better and better. But we don't have the market cap to support that. So then we had to think of, right, if we actually want to do work in our own right, Justin, what do we spend money on, considering our low market cap and the fact that we have to be very careful with cash? Now, I really like Eureka. Colin really likes Eureka. The issue with it is fundamentally it needs some pre-work to identify drill targets, but it needs drilling. And the drilling will basically tell you whether it's yes or no. But there's not an awful lot of data around that. So it is basically a very... For a company with our market cap, you've got to be careful with the money, and there's a risk in it at this present time which we're not willing to take, hence the JV strategy. Zambia, on the other hand, we're quite excited about. The teams were there a couple of weeks ago because that's got quite a lot of data on it, and it should be relatively cheap exploration. So basically you'll be getting a lot of data and a high probability of getting a lot of positive data from Zambia. So that's what we're sort of thinking about doing in our own right, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And Argentina itself, I mean, you say that, you know, the Philippines is risky. Argentina, what's it like there?
Well, Argentina itself is really interesting. I mean, it had a horrible time over the last 5 years. I mean, Bazan has suffered from political risk issues in both Argentina and the Philippines. Jujuy, where we are, is one of the most difficult regions of Argentina. I'll put it right out there. There's no doubt about it. But several things have happened. There's been a major shift in how Argentina and also Jujuy are seeing mining projects, which is best summed up by there's a new head of the Minerals Department, Jujuy, who's an ex-geologist, who's excellent and who's been very supportive but thorough in helping us, along with his assistants, actually get this process completed, which was environmental but a fairly substantive community engagement piece which we had to undertake. But what they're seeing, what Jujuy is seeing, is they're seeing huge amounts of investment in other parts of Argentina from major companies into the mining industry. And I have to say, some of the presentations I've seen from the Argentinian government and the regional governments have been fascinating, because they're not focusing on look at the wonderful geology, which people in a sense know about. They're focusing on look at the cross-border investments over the last 12 months by, you know, you name a mining company. And that's really interesting. So Jujuy's very much changing how it does things. I think if you're in metals, hard metals like copper and gold, you're in a pretty good place. It's been a big issue, Argentina, but I think things are really coming around, especially for the mining industry. And geology-wise, asset-wise, you know, it's fantastic. You know, we picked up... I'd love to go and drill Eureka. Just no two ways about it, but I can't because I can't risk it. Because what we think it is basically a series of copper gold sedimentary layers, red bed layers, but then we've got these resistivity zones, yeah. Resistant zones, the IP underneath. And what we think those are is specific metal feeder zones. So you've probably got quite a nice mining grade going down, but then what's sitting under that, relatively new to surface, could well be more gold rich feeder zones. And that's hugely exciting. But with a market cap of 800,000 and not a substantive amount of data to support that to a level which we think we can justify drilling, we want a JV partner to come in who's specialist in South America, so we don't have to spend money rebuilding a team in South America to drill it. But, you know, it's been said before, if assets like this were over the border, they'd probably be mines, to be honest, and many, many times the value. Mm-hmm. It's just rather unfortunate that we have to be in a position where we have to look at JVing these types of assets out, because having a copper gold portfolio, I think, is really exciting. The big question is whether it's going to change into and reflect into the share price.
Yeah, and do you think it'd be quite easy to JV these assets?
No, I don't think it is easy to JV the assets. We've done an awful lot of work, and it's not exciting RNS-able work. I mean, we have RNS this EIA, but that's taken a long amount of time and an awful lot of effort and thoughtful work. But it's been needed to move on the JV strategy. Equally, the work we did at the beginning of the year on Mankind is proving highly useful. But again, it takes lots of thoughtful work on, right, okay, we're listening to groups, we're listening to feedback, this is how I think we need to progress. And then the team works towards that. It's not just a case of going out there and saying, look at this great big load of copper gold, come JV it, thanks very much for your paper or your cash. But what I do think is that both the assets are extremely attractive. And both the assets genuinely stand out. What we've got to do is we've got to find a JV partner who has proper credibility. That's one issue. And supports, you know, fairly short to mid-term copper gold fundamentals.
Mm-hmm. And where are you with that? I mean, discussions ongoing with JV partners?
Yeah, no, absolutely. But as I've said to shareholders in one-to-one conversations, until anything's signed, announced, etc., we're not going to disclose that. But I can tell you what we do is that, especially last year, is we listen to feedback. And we don't just go, oh, those people don't like it for these reasons, isn't that sad? Let's move on to the next group. What we do is go, okay, these are the issues. Let's try and fix these issues. Go away, sort them out, work on it, and then come back and try and progress the talks with either these people or new people. So we're learning and building all the time. And that strategy, while slow and tedious, is actually providing benefit. We've got some really great offerings now. And as I said, the geology, the assets themselves stack up. That's not the issue. We're not peddling, you know, completely low-grade, uneconomic nonsense. These are real projects that have actually got legs to them, and that's great.
Yeah, cool. Okay, and how easy was it to get these approvals in Argentina? You know, is it easy to work there?
No, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy at all. And it from when we decided to do it, it was one of the first priorities when we sort of started doing stuff at the beginning of last year. Once we looked at Eureka, we thought, okay. And it was a slow process. We did lots of community engagement work, lots of consultations. right up in the north. Great work done by our team. I think, frankly, you know, I wanted to complete this process. I'll just tell you and the shareholders openly, quite a long time ago, I was hoping for Q4 last year, actually. The thing that really has made the difference, I have to say, as well as all the good work from our team, is adopting a really quite different can-do, right? We want the mining industry to work. We want mining investment here. We're still going to carefully go through all the processes of consultation and do all the right things. But we're actually going to make the list move. We're actually going to get this process going. And that's pretty much verbatim what I heard from the new senior man at the government of Ahui, is that there's no shortcuts or anything like that. You've got to do all the work properly, etc., which we have done. But he says, if you have done that and you've got all the consultation and the informed consent, we're going to make sure this progresses through the pipeline. And he was as good as his word.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I mean, like I say, you know, it's... Where do you go? I mean, you're looking for JVL, so that's the way forward, isn't it, really? Because at the moment, like you said, having a market cap this size, a SP's taking a hammer in, it puts you in a corner, really, you know. And is that the best way out, finding a JV? And what do you put your chances of that happening successfully, finding a JV?
Well, I'm not going to put the percentage on the chances, but yeah, no, JV strategy is definitely deliverable. I don't think there's any doubt about that. It's not to say that there's never a 100% chance in the mining industry, but you know, the reason we have discussions with people and the reason we have consultation is that, again, these are proper assets. So we are backed into a corner. Yeah, you're right. But what we do have is we have three, I think, really great assets. It breaks my heart, actually, the fact that, you know, the share price is so low for whatever reasons. I'm not having a whinge, because actually, it's the time to take these three assets and really go out and do things with them in this you know, wonderful copper market, especially for supply deficit, which I think we're about to see over the next couple of years. But we can't do that. So, yeah, I think we need to JV. I mean, the Zambia, you know, from everything that's coming back from the recent visits, you know, it looks enormously exciting, but also cheap to execute. And also we can work and explore around areas where work has been done in the past, and take existing data sets and say, right, well, what does this mean and how do we improve them and how do we develop them, rather than doing the junior exploration thing of going out there and say, right, we're going to drill loads and loads and loads of holes, which is not on. Mm-hmm. So yeah, cost effective, careful, thoughtful work. But no, I'd love to be able to raise money and actually go out and do that, but we can't do that because it would dilute the shareholders too much. And you know, one of our chairman is one of the core shareholders, so that's not going to be happening.
Yeah, okay. Well, one final thing, Lawrence, to do. That's give us three reasons if someone is listening to you and thinking, okay, they can see the potential here from a sort of low market cap, even though it's high risk, of course. Give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Go and look at copper gold fundamentals and think, right, if I want access to copper gold and the upside to copper gold, and I think, well, stocks and copper are somewhat suppressed in the UK by the Brexit stock market and general malaise of junior mining stocks, and then also the rumbling on of PRC, US trade issues. If I think they're going to go away, and I believe pretty much everything else I see in terms of copper fundamentals, look at Bazan's share price and look at the amount of copper gold it has, especially the copper, and go and look at the pictures that we have of bright green copper in our projects, because I just think the valuation's ridiculous at the moment. We have the assets. We're just boxing clever as how to get maximum value at this present moment in time.
Marvellous stuff, Lawrence. Thanks for that, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks a lot.
Brilliant. Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communication. Jor, Al.
Very good morning, Jus. Lovely sunny day here.
Yeah.
All good, you're in.
Yeah, well, listen, I want to get straight into it because I heard you, we always say, what are we talking about today, Al? And you mentioned Thomas Cook, and you reckon it's a trading opportunity, yeah? Did you see my piece in the... I tweeted about these last week. And all of a sudden, I had a reporter from the Daily Mail contact me saying, do you mind if I direct message you and ask you a couple of questions about this? And I said, give my opinion. And I was in the feature in the Daily Mail. And then the Mail on Sunday contacted me. I don't know how they just called me up. I was in the garden centre with my parents and my family. And they called me up. How do you get my number? Because I only spoke to the other girl and the other reporter, you know, on Twitter. How do you get my number? That's phenomenal, isn't it? And... but it turns out I know a reporter that they know, so that it works for the same sort of company. But that's a bit dodgy with data protection and all that. I'm sharing my number. But anyway, what's your thoughts? I'm going to say now, before you even say it's a trading opportunity, I'm saying to people, avoid it. It's an avoidable risk. Let me just say it's an avoidable risk.
I totally understand why you'd say that too. But
let me just say one thing. I've done videos on avoidable risks, how to improve your chances, your probability of success in investing, okay?
Indeed.
And one of those points is avoid companies with debt. You don't need to play with them. You don't need to bet. There's plenty of companies out there with no debt, very little debt, or very manageable debt, debt that can sustain. Thomas Cook, I believe, hasn't got a debt pile that can sustain or manage, and it'll take them under.
Okay. Well,
I'll tell you why that is, right? Their debt, I'm going to tell you how much debt they got. They got debt of 1.3 billion, right?
1.2 billion, actually. Yeah,
their cash outflow in the last 6 months, outflow, this is loss. I mean, right, pre-tax loss was 1.4 billion. That's because of the write down of my travel. Ignoring that, their cash outflow, they used in operations was 711 million, right? At their market cap right now, what is it? It's about
176 million.
176 million. Yeah, so 183 million I've got here.
Yeah.
So it's almost, eight times, their debt is eight times the entire valuation of the company. They're making a loss. They can't service that debt. So it's like you Al, let's say you've got a little business there, right? And you owe me, I'll bring the figures down, but let's say you owe me £13,000, all right? And I come and knock on your door, and everything you own pretty much is valued at, valued at £1.80. And I say, you owe me 13 grand. And he said, well, I can't repay because I lost 700 quid last year, and I'm still losing money. So, you haven't got any cash to spend it. You can't buy anything. You're drowning in debt. People are not going to book holidays with you because they're scared now. The situation is going to get worse. You are going under, full stop. There's no way you can pay me. You can't even pay yourself. You're losing money. Now, tell me that's why that isn't avoidable. Just avoid it.
That's one viewpoint, Jess.
It's a financial viewpoint.
We've been here before. 8-9 years ago, the company, exactly the same.
Level of debt.
There was a Spanish CEO was in charge, and the guy who was running the company. They weren't controlling costs. They weren't careful on expenditure, and the strategy was wrong. Harriet Green came in and turned the company around just like that. Now, this is a company. Yes, it's got debt.
Different outlook, different competition out there now. They are in trouble. They won't last 6 months. They'll be gone.
It's changing. It's changing. I agree.
They can't sell their airline. They can't sell it.
They've had multiple bids for the airline. Peter Fankhauser has said they've had multiple bids.
Of course, he's going to say that. But the thing is,
I also note the story this morning from Michael O'Leary at Ryanair is saying that he expects a raft of airlines to go down the tubes in the coming years because it's getting difficult. So yeah, they're selling into a difficult market. But Fankhauser said that they have bids now. I don't think Peter Fankhauser will be there for much longer, personally. I think we've got a situation now. He took over from Harriet Green, who was a very hard act to follow. She maybe saw that she was able to take the company so far and look further down the road and couldn't see any growth. But you've got a bunch of assets here. The company's still turned over 3 billion quid.
Doesn't matter. They're lost. They lost money. You can turn over as much as you want.
Of course it matters.
If you're losing money hand over fist, It doesn't matter. Yes. That's the problem. That's a massive problem.
Which requires restructuring. You've got assets there. You can restructure and you can cut costs. A good CEO will come in there, drive a coach and horses through the balance sheet and sell assets off. They're already. They have a $300 million facility at the moment with the bank. The China joint venture is progressing. They closed 21 retail stores. They're reviewing Thomas Cook money. Some of this year is in line. They've just appointed a new non-exec finance director, formerly of Avon, Sabmiller and Sogo Sun in South Africa, to assist them with turning the company around. They have a joint venture in Russia. The big impairment this time round was from my travel. Yes,
yeah,
but they still...
Cash flow from operations is not including the thing. This is 711 million. That's three times the size of the company outflow of cash, right? They've got, I said, I'm looking here, current assets, 1.7 billion. That's a current asset. Current liabilities, 3.7 billion. There's 2 billion there. 2 billion. Okay. That's 10 times the size of their valuation. Within 12 months, right? Within 12 months, they have to sort that out.
The valuation.
They can't get that anywhere near that.
The valuation is where it is because as you say, a lot of investors have jumped out. They've got scared by the position.
Also, people are not going to book with them now anymore. Their business is going down the tubes. Honestly, the bookings will be less. They will not. That revenue you talked about will go down. That even though they're making a loss on that, that'll get worse. Their liabilities will go up. This is going the way of Debenhams. Honestly, next 6 months.
Non-exec director Jamie Wilson has come in to help.
I don't care about these people coming in. I don't care. It's like chucking people.
It's like putting the people on the Titanic
and saying, "Excuse me, fella, take control of the Titanic. Well, you've driven ships before. It doesn't matter. It's going down. And the Titanic was this. There was 4 hours the boat to reach them. They'd be underwater in two. That's it."
Right. Okay. So there's your opinion. There's my opinion. Now, there are four brokers who've also got opinions on the stock too. Otto, Jefferies, Berenberg and UBS. Now, there's a sell rating, there's a neutral rating, a reduced rating and a buy rating in there. The average target price is 20p. Okay, so four brokers there have done their research, had a look at the balance sheet. This is after the results are announced and they've come out with those judgments. So at the very least,
You could look at the brokers after Debenhams and that. They're the same.
Yeah,
and one of those brokers is probably their broker. So,
absolutely. And there are brokers that also support Carillion too. I totally get that. However, we've got a company that's still very much a going concern. It's got a huge number of assets. And
assets. They haven't. They got 2 billion liabilities. They haven't got any assets. They haven't got anything. City Analyst said their shares are worth nothing. The debt, their debt they have is also worth less than that you should be paid for. The debt has been becoming worthless. They're worth nothing. Honestly, they're worth minus 2 billion.
Okay, all right. So what's caught my interest in this stock is that we have a very similar, not an identical situation, a very similar situation to the point where Harriet Green came in back about 8 years ago. And the company was trading at this level. The stock then started bouncing between 10p and 20p. Now, I traded this stock, and it was one of the best trades for me for the last decade. I did make some decent money there. But I traded and I got out. I didn't hold this long term. Then once it recovered, in fact, it was Zach who now works for Vox Markets. Zach actually made a technical call at the time, and he said if this stock closes at above 28p this Friday, it will go on to 40p, and it did exactly that. So I was about to sell the stock at the end of the week. Held on to it. By the end of next week, it was 40p, and it then powered on higher. So my point here is that
it's a traded opportunity, but I wouldn't hang around.
It's not necessarily an investable proposition right now. However, watch the news flow on this carefully, because I do believe that if they bring a new CEO in to turn this around, that they could bring somebody of Harry Green's calibre in to turn the company around. They'd have to sell off a lot of assets. They'd have to completely change the way the company did business and cut its cost base dramatically, as we know, because of the debt that's already there. But it can be done. You know, the company, there is still turnover $3 billion. $3 every, $3 billion sterling every 6 months, and you know, that won't die overnight. So my point is that, yeah, there, I believe there's a trading opportunity here. Set a stop loss, so a trading stop loss, run very close. But I think at this level, you will see the stock probably power up as high as 20p and then probably come back down again. That will all be on news flow. But there's a trading opportunity here, whatever anyone says, in my opinion.
When did Harriet Green jump into Thomas Cook then? When was that?
I was looking at this. It only seems a few years ago, but I think you'll find it's about 2012, 2013.
Yes, I think it is.
Yeah. And she came in, and that made her, personally, I mean, she did a great job. She cut costs. She basically redesigned the business, brought the business up to date. And then on the back of that, she won Verve Clicquot Woman of the Year, and so on and so forth, and it very much made her career. So Peter Fankhauser then took over, and I think he was her number two at the time. And you know, he's okay. So all he's done is try to steady the ship since then. He hasn't cut costs successfully. So I believe this is prime. This company is prime. If you see Peter Fankhauser step down in the next few months, I wouldn't be surprised. New CEO comes in, and we could have a very interesting trading situation here. But yes. It's not necessarily an investable proposition right now, but it's a trading proposition, provided you run a close stop loss.
Let me have a look at. I want to look at the. Let's have a look. Free cash flow. Yeah, but do you know what? They were earning money back then. Their net debt. Do you know their net debt was a lot? It was half the size it is now.
Yeah,
their net debt was smaller.
886 million at the full year, and it's now 1.2 something billion. Yeah, no, I know that. But, you know, you've had that one-off impairment from the merger with Mind Travel. That won't recur again, okay? So somebody comes in. We've got Jamie Wilson in now, who's an expert, who's been former FD at Saab Miller and Avon. So they brought this guy in to help them address the situation, cut costs, and start to turn the company around. The biggest challenge I think for the company is selling off the airline. Once they do that, despite what Michael O'Leary says today, you know, the airline, the infrastructure there is worth selling off. And you know, the service, I mean, crikey, we flew Thomas Cook a few years ago down to Cape Town. And
I'm booked with it to go in July with them. So that's where I was.
There you go.
I mean, we're insured. But
so as you get on the plane, you're going to be saying, sell the shares.
I hope this plane doesn't go down like the shares. Because we're in big trouble. I just want to find out what their. Let me look. Okay. Let me scroll down here. Yeah, but do you know what? The cash flow. Net operating cash flow. Even then, at least said cash flow come in. Net cash from operating. Back in 2012, this was, right? This is the end of the year, 2011-12. They had 288 million coming in, net cash flow for operations. They got 711 million going out this time.
They've also opened 12 own brand hotels across Europe and in the Mediterranean, and those are going great guns. So you know, the strategy is evolving and changing as you have to do with a company like this. But there's still a big challenge there. So they've taken the first step by.
Their liabilities were similar back then. They had current liabilities of 3.7 billion. Current assets of 1.6, so they're pretty much the same, but at least they had money coming in to service the debt. At the moment, they haven't. And I feel at the moment, during Brexit as well, we've had a lot more people. But I think I'll be surprised if they get out of this. But they did last time. I think it was a more buoyant market back then.
But also they got the right person in for the job, and I think if the right person steps in now, somebody young and dynamic to drive the business forward and bring it up to date, because it's still a really old company. I mean, it's the oldest one of the oldest travel companies in the world. You know,
that doesn't mean anything though. Honestly, brands can go under, as we know, all brands can go under if they haven't got the figures and they can't service their debt. It'll go under. Doesn't matter how long they've been around for. You know, they can go coots of.
Slight deviation. I was reading a book on travel in Germany between the wars, and in particular leading up to the Second World War.
Sounds like a light read.
Yeah. Thomas Cook was selling sort of holiday trips to Germany, travel to Germany, all the way in the run up to the start of the Phony War in 39-40, and selling Bavaria and the Rhineland, and the wonderful people, the wonderful beers, the hostelry, and the friendship and everything else, and all this in the run up to the Second World War. So I don't think we've got in that situation now, but this is an old company that's changed. It's reinvented itself many times, and as a betting man, I would put my money on this company to do that again.
But well, that's it. It's a bet. Do you know what?
I don't think it'll do it with the incumbent management. I would expect to see a new CEO come in.
No, you said it there as a betting man. You know, and betting is about odds against wins, pretty much. On odds on. I'm an investor. I try and shape, my investments to the case where they be odds on probability. Betting is about odds against, and that's what it is. And odds against, listen, I'm not saying they won't be here, because they survived something like this last time, but last time they're actually making money. This time they're not. They're losing a lot of money. So yeah. I don't know. It's very touch and go. To me, because of that, that's an avoidable risk. And that's simple as that. I think I don't have to invest in this at all, so I won't. I go somewhere else that's safer. You may get a nice, a sharp whip up in the share price if a lifeline is thrown to them or they release some positive news. But to me, you can avoid this risk. And it's a big risk, and it's a known risk. It's staring you right in the face. You don't have to. Shares are, risky enough as it is without having to take on this kind of risk where you know a company is drowning in debt and they're not making money. You don't have to take that risk on, And
Absolutely. So you treat this like a trade if you can buy in at this level.
Bet, like you said.
Yeah, if you combine at this level, run a close trailing stop loss, and so if there is a sudden pullback, you get out and you can hopefully log some money. And that's what the stock is about right now. But you see, the current malaise will be attributed to the current CEO, which is Peter Fankhauser, and I don't believe he can survive this. I think the way to turn this company around is you've got a new FD in place or a new non-exec, who's come in to work with the FD, who may well end up being FD one day, who knows, but I also believe a new CEO will come in to do the job of turning the company around. But that's just my personal opinion, not fact, nothing to substantiate that, but that's just my viewpoint.
God, do you know what, 22nd of November 2011, it hit this level exactly 10 pence pretty much, so, and it went back up to 180, 185.
It did. I had a fantastic run then, and I'm looking at this company and thinking, well, it's already happened. There is still momentum. There's a huge amount of turnover nonetheless. You restructure this company, you make some drastic cost cuts and hive this off and sell this off. Okay, you'll cut the turnover a bit, but you're still going to have a company that's turning over an awful lot of money. And, it's an absolute super tanker, this thing. This company is rolling along, throwing off this cash everywhere. It's got these huge debt issues, but they're not.
It's not throwing off cash, though. That's the trouble. It's not throwing off cash. That's the thing. It's not. It's taking in cash, and it's going straight out to pay debt. And they can't even pay that debt. So they're not even earning enough money to pay debt. So they're not paying their debt down. That's the thing. Debt is building. The interest payments from debt alone, they can't afford. So it means taking in cash. They're not making cash. It's going straight out to debtors, or creditors. So it's a bet, it's a risk, it's a trade, but there we are. Okay, let's move on to something else. Less volatile for us and for other shares.
For us and for the show, okay. So we've spoken about this company before. Brave Bison Group, BBSN is the epic code. Shares have been as high as 4.75p on the year. Low as 1.26. Currently trading at 1.68p. So Brave Bison, they are social video specialists. They run 18 different social media channels, engaging with users that are aged between 16 and 34, and they work with key brands across the world: Shell, Slash Football, Rebel FC, utilitarian energies, and they also run channels across Indonesia, and they have distribution deals in China as well. They are the world's second biggest digital publisher, which is quite something. And March this year, they announced set of results which showed that revenue had risen 19% to 21 million. Loss before tax had reduced from 17 million to 100,000. Mm-hmm. EBITDA had turned positive to 800,000 from a loss of 0.9 a loss of 900,000 previously, and they said at that point that they were the biggest Facebook publisher in the world. The company, three directors in the company, Sir Robin Miller, Paul Marshall, and the new CEO Kate Burns, all bought shares at that time as well. So you know, a very strong endorsement of the company from the board. There was a bit of a blip. The CEO that had really driven the business and growing the business rapidly over a very short space of time, Claire Hungate, suddenly upped and left the company. But she was replaced by Kate Burns, who, as I said previously, has a pretty impressive CV. She's a very active sportswoman, into her show jumping, all the rest of it. But you know, she's very well regarded in her field. And Kate, I think, is going to pick up the mantle from where Claire left off, and she's going to run with it. This company's got huge potential. Again, new technology company. Digital media, digital video, as we know, is the place to be right now, as you know, with your own video channel, Just. The great thing about this company as well, that its cash position is really strong. At the last reckoning, there was 5 million cash in the bank with no borrowing at all. So cash positive, the company's just turned EBITDA positive. It's got cash in the bank and a great board to help grow the company and push it forward. And it's got distribution channels globally. And I think this is a really exciting company to watch. Could well see the shares returning to year highs in the run-up to the next trading update.
Well, yeah, I think as long as the operations are, you know, continue to improve, because they have, and like I say, the Claire Hungate did a great job. Look at this. Cash outflow from operating activities in 2017 was 1.5 million. Now, it's the first time they've ever had cash inflow. In 2018, 858,000 cash came in, you know, so, yep. And then they're valued at 10.6 million. And they've got 5.6 million in cash. So they're creating cash. They're building cash. They have cash, half their valuation. And I think as long as it continues on that trajectory, I think we could see a company here that one of the biggest publishers on Facebook is advert reliant. They haven't got a particularly great USP apart from that. But they're generating cash and they're valued just, you know, 5 million. They're one of the biggest publishers on Facebook. And so I think that's undervalued, considering they've restructured. And there was that uncertainty about her stepping down. The CFO sold some shares on the final results. So there's all that uncertainty. But I contacted Claire on LinkedIn, and she said, you know, the reason she stepped down was nothing to do with operations of the company at all. So I don't know what
personal
it was, probably
reasons,
personal reasons or something like that. So there's just that uncertainty, I think. And in my head, part of me thinks that uncertainty could provide an opportunity, you know, because the share price is low here. So it's very little value. You know, I mean, if you take the where it is and its listing and its board and all that, it's valued at 5 million, you know, ex cash. So it's not a lot going on here. What's going on? I'm either, and it's about time we did an update. I'm waiting for an update. I'm assuming Kate, the CEO, is looking for something positive to post. So
absolutely.
She hasn't done an update personally yet, you know.
Well, the next landmark is the AGM, which is on the 19th of June, and I would expect to see some sort of trading update or some sort of note from the company ahead of that. You know, perhaps obviously a contract win would be great, but I think we are due an update. An update is imminent. We know that they'll provide an update with the AGM, so I would expect to, if nothing else, to say something to investors at the AGM on the 19th of June.
Marvellous. It's BBSN. What else, Al? Anything else?
Okay, this is Itaconics. ITX is the Epic code. So Itaconics is it's a biotech company, and it produces sustainable bio-based environmentally friendly products. Polymers from itaconic acid, which are used in laundry, water softening, cosmetics, detergents, wider applications for agriculture, industry, and so on. So what's interesting in particular about this company is it's had a bit of an up and down year sort of on the chart, but the company 77% in fact of the stock is held with institutions, so there's a very small free float. But the company came to market and indeed has made substantial progress with major partners, the biggest names in the chemical industries, ExxonMobil and Solvay. It's got partnerships with those companies to accelerate market growth. Estimated market size this company is selling into is several billion. At the moment, the company's got a market cap of just over 9 million. Announcement today from the company, it signed its first personal care order with Nouryon, which is the former ExxonMobil specialty chemicals company. A couple of weeks ago, it also announced its first European order for its polymer detergent offering. Company updated on numbers in February. Revenues at 0.7 million were in line. EBITDA was in line. Company had 2 million net cash in the bank, and it was well positioned for growth. It's got a great CEO in John Shaw taking the company forward. At the moment, the company just seems to be ticking all the boxes, and I think it's got, as a biotech company of this size, a microcap biotech company, working with such major names and having partnerships with ExxonMobil and Solvay, it's a pretty rare to find a company of this sort of caliber with this sort of market cap. So I expect to see substantial growth from the company, and I think we are due a further trading update at the end of June.
Yeah, I don't quite get it, though. I mean it's like 700,000. That's not a lot, is it? Their revenue, considering they're valued at almost close to 10 million, and they're going to be losing money. So I don't get that. I haven't done enough research to see what's going to happen going forward. But as yet, I'm not impressed by that revenue and that valuation. I'm missing something here, am I, or what? I don't understand.
I think the company is valued on its partnerships as much as anything else, and the fact that it's got these partnerships with ExxonMobil and Solvay already, and clearly if you've got those partnerships signed, then the due diligence on the effectiveness of the solutions they provide has already been done. So the there's no doubt the potential is in the marketplace. Now, I believe the market cap versus the actual revenues the company is generating is more to do with the potential attributed to a possible takeover or possible interest from one or the other of these companies. Because if the company is working and is providing a successful solution to both, then to me it's an obvious bolt-on to one of the major chemical companies. So I think there's some value and some upside in the market cap for that. But as we go forward, the more deals the company signs, the more the growth will accelerate, the more the revenue will accelerate, and clearly I think we'll see great things to come. I think I do like this company. It's cornered a niche in the market, and you know, the fact that you've got such a big institutional shareholding as well also tells its own story.
Okay, I'll sit and wait. I'll watch, but as yet I'm not convinced. As yet, as I'm not with Thomas Cook. It's a trading opportunity. And if we see some news come in, maybe. But as yet, I think it's highly risky, you know.
Okay, I take your point, but that's two opinions. They make a market. So I'm interested in particularly Thomas Cook because we're seeing almost exactly the same series of events that occurred before Harry Green stepped in.
I said this, though. They were making money back then. They're not making money. That's a massive difference. And not only that, they're losing a lot of money.
The marketplace is different, but you've still got a company that turns over $3 billion over six months.
The difference is, though, let me just say, go back to Thomas. The difference is, if you've got a bank loan, right, and you're making money, you can service the debt. If you're making a profit, you can pay down that debt. If you're not, you can't. The bank will just call it in. That's it. So, because if there's no way...
Well, the banks... The bank has already given them a $300 million facility, which will give them time to undertake some restructuring. Now, if they sell the airline, if they sell off more of their retail outlets that are losing money, then I know these processes take time, but they've got assets that they can sell off.
But in a business environment, if you're desperate to sell something, and everyone knows you're desperate to sell it, you're not going to get a good price for it.
Well, no, you could say that they could sell one of the retail outlets and maybe sell it to
who's going to want that? It's a dying breed. Online in that now. In 2011, online
you could sell it to a different sort of retailer. So if the shop's got a good position in High Street and they want to sell that on, then maybe another shop will buy it. Maybe another brand.
Be honest.
Going for, retail business will buy it.
Look how different we are now. We are 8 years on. There are people now, you know, who used to go into shops don't go into shops anymore. So online has flourished in the last 9, 10 years, you know. So it's a different environment completely. No one's going to buy a shop. Who goes into a shop these days looking at picks up a brochure? Who does that? Apart from my missus. My missus goes in, she does it online, and then she goes in the shop to check the brochure to make sure the hotel actually exists.
Social enterprise, you know, the world's turning full circle. I think the High Street will be repopulated by different businesses over. A lot of High Streets now are populated by betting shops and secondhand shops, but I think this will change in the coming years.
It'll turn into a pound shop, probably, or a betting shop, or a betting shop, which is quite highly appropriate.
Betting shop, most likely, yeah, for sure.
Lovely, marvellous stuff, and check you've got travel insurance before you book with Thomas Cook.
Make sure you check yours before you get on the plane, Justin.
That's the reason why I was worried about it, but apparently we are covered by Atoll, I think, which is the ABTA, new ABTA, apparently. So there we are. I don't know. We'll soon find out. As long as, you know, someone else said to me that he's going on holidays on Wednesday. Someone on Twitter said, I'm going on holidays on Wednesday with Thomas Cook. I said, well, just let the captain know it's okay to go into administration as soon as your wheels have left the runway. Because you don't mind getting stranded out there in nice weather, but you don't want to get stranded at the airport and say, sorry, you can't go.
That's very true. No, I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah. The famous last words. Right, that's it. I'm really sure the captain said that on the Titanic. It'll be fine.
It'll be fine, yeah. It's only a scratch.
Exactly. We'll spray that up. So we'll give it a quick rub, spray it up, it'll be fine.
That's right, yeah.
Lovely. Cheers, sir. I'll speak next week.
Thanks, Jess. Speak next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Market in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Thomas Cook Group. It's up today, 17%. Of course, it's fallen like, 50% last week, pretty much close to, or 48%. And I argue with Alan about that. At four, Block Energy, BLOE, down 6.8%. At three, Emotion Group, IMMO. Check out my video on that, please. And subscribe to my YouTube channel, yeah? Hit the bell notification. I talk about Emotion. I like Martin a lot. He's a very successful businessman. And he's got skin in the game, and I think he knows something here. IMMO. Add to U Group. YU dot. Number one most followed company is Talou Energy. TLOU or Talou Energy. Depends how you pronounce it, but of course, had a decent RNS out yesterday. And in fact, it's probably covered. Yes, it is covered here. So let's look at the top five most liked RNSs. At five, Iron Ridge Resources. Exploration update, Ghana Lithium Portfolio. At four, Oriole Resources. Final results, phase one trenching, Bibemi. At three, Motive Bio, Iclaprim. Data presented at ASM Microbe 2019. At two, Sirius Minerals. Results of open offer. And number one, most liked RNS, is from Talou Energy. Confirmation of tender approval with the Botswana government. Yeah. So Talou has been selected as a preferred bidder for the coal bed methane tender with the Botswana government. There's coal bed methane fuel power plants in Botswana. The company will now work with the government to finalise all projects agreements. An enormous step forward for the company in the development of gas to power. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.